Judaism certainly stresses the power of reason, and yet at the same time, it does emphasize that human beings must always be aware that there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in our philosophy. Welcome to 10 Minute Mitzvah, episode 129, More Things in Heaven and Earth. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's year-long 10-Minute Mitzvah podcast is generously sponsored by Ivan and Susanna Kaufman.
There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. So Hamlet says at the beginning of the play named for him. As Marjorie Garber notes, this is one of many phrases from the play that has become part of our parlance. In the context, as scholars note, Hamlet seems to be referring to the fact that often there are aspects of our lives, aspects of existence, beyond our own power of reason. And placed within the age that the play was composed, it is perhaps referring, as scholars further suggest, or at least obliquely referencing, the debates following the Reformation, when the question of what one can know was particularly pertinent. Indeed, at the heart of politics, war, theology. Judaism certainly stresses the power of reason, and yet at the same time, it does emphasize that human beings must always be aware that there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in our philosophy, by which I mean that we must understand that there are aspects of our lives that are overseen by the Almighty and which we cannot fully explain. And it is the joining of reason and faith that is perhaps the theme at the heart of the famous Talmudic tale of Dama ben Atina. The appearance of this character in Agadah, in rabbinic storytelling, is itself fascinating because it involves the elevation of a pagan person as, at least in one context, a moral paradigm. Discussing the obligation of honoring parents, the rabbis offer the example of a man from Ashkelon, who is not a monotheist, and yet is steadfastly dedicated to honoring his father. This man's name was Dama ben Atina, and he appears to have been a jeweler. As the story describes, the rabbis, during the time of the temple, were in need of a jewel for the choshen, the breastplate worn by the high priest. In order to find this rare stone, they went to Dama ben Atina. While they were prepared to pay, the price demanded one that was clearly high. Dama ben Atina found that the key to the treasure chest in which the gem was held was under the pillow of his father, who was sleeping, and did not wish to disturb the patriarch of his family. He therefore turned the rabbis away. As reward, we are informed, Dama ben Atina's flock was gifted with an animal that is our mitzvah for the day. A red heifer was born to him. This creature, we are further informed, was extremely rare and even more valuable to the rabbis that had previously appeared as customers before Dama. Yet Dama, we are further informed, would only accept the original price that the rabbis were willing to pay for the gem on behalf of the red heifer, because he did not wish to appear to profit from his honoring of his father. Thus we have here the joining of two very different commandments in one Talmudic tale, the obligation to honor parents and the law of the red heifer. The point, perhaps, and here I am drawing on an insight offered by my grandfather, Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, is that these two obligations, taken together in tandem, in a certain sense, embody the entire Torah. Honoring ancestors, showing respect and love for parents, is an obligation that is intuitive. Its worthiness is revealed to reason. When, however, it comes to the law of the red heifer, there its details are more mysterious. It is introduced as a chukat ha-Torah, a chok, a law, a commandment. And the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, This is the statute of the law, which the Lord hath commanded, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, that they bring thee a red heifer faultless, wherein is no blemish, and upon which never came yoke. And ye shall give it to Eleazar the priest, that he may bring it forth outside the camp, and it shall be slaughtered before him. And Eleazar the priest shall take of its blood with his finger, and sprinkle of its blood directly before the tent of meeting 7 times. So we are told. Then, as scripture further states, the heifer is burnt, and, moreover, this again is the continuation of the passage, and the priest shall take cedar wood, hyssop, and crimson material, and throw them into the fire. After informing us of this, we are then told how the ashes that result, mixed with a special form of water, provide for the purification of those defiled from contact with the dead. While drawing on the work of others, I have offered explanations for how this works and how it is placed within the context of biblical ritual law, discussed in my Bible 365 series and Numbers Weekly publication. At the same time, the rabbis do stress that the laws pertaining to this ritual cannot be fully understood and reflects the faith we have in following the instructions of the Almighty to the letter, reflecting thereby our own understanding of the limitations of the human mind, expressing, in other words, that there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in our philosophy. Strikingly, in another version of the Talmudic tale, we are told that Dhamma himself not only honored his father, but ultimately, following the passing of the patriarch, turned a reminder of him into an idol. The story thus indicates that as admirable as Dhamma's reverence for his father may have been, all intuitively ethical obligations are meant to be further guided by the instructions of Scripture. For without a reminder of our own limitations, without reflecting on our fallibilities, without understanding that we are not God, there is a danger of divinizing human beings. The famous line from Hamlet appeared, if you will, in another play of sorts, overseen by an important modern influence on drama. Rod Serling, creator of a well-known show, featured in the very passage that I am about to describe. It was at the conclusion of one TV episode that Serling had created, where he intoned, "Dialogue from a play, Hamlet to Horatio. There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy." Dialogue from a play written long before men took to the sky. "There are more things in heaven and earth and in the sky than perhaps can be dreamt of. And somewhere in between heaven, the sky, and the earth lies the twilight zone." A striking series of sentences, especially because from a Jewish perspective, twilight, the period between sundown and full darkness, is described by the rabbis as a period in which even they were not fully aware of whether it was day or night. It was, in other words, an aspect of Jewish law regarding which they were not certain, a constant reminder that there were indeed more things in heaven and earth than that which they could fully understand. It is only when we combine reason and faith, when we join in the felicitous phrase of Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, belief in humanity's capacity for what he called majesty and humility, only then can we be capable of intellectual and spiritual greatness. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.